In Genesis 41, we've talked about Joseph being sold, how that he ended up in Potiphar's house, was betrayed, ends up in prison, reveals a dream, is not remembered for two more years, but at the end of those 2 years, Pharaoh had a dream. And that's where we are now. If you'll remember in chapter 41, it says that Pharaoh dreamed a dream and nobody could interpret it. Now understand this about his interpreters. They actually had manuals that they would turn to. They had books, you know, because other people had come up with explanations, you know. And you probably, if you went online or you did any kind of research, you could find what things mean in dreams. Now, that's an interpretation, but it's kind of a legend, you know, a map, a key, so we could understand dreams. But I want you to understand something. Here's what a dream is, unless it's inspired by God. Now, a dream can be inspired by God. But most of the time, a dream is just our brain while we sleep. You see that electricity going on, and it's been, the best description I've ever heard is, it's like a street sweeper. You ever see a street sweeper at night going through the city? And as that street sweeper is going through our mind, our brain, as what's happening is the things that are important are filed. And that's why if you take a test, you always study just before you go to bed, because that stuff sticks. And so the important stuff gets filed away, and the stuff that's not important gets swept out and thrown away. Of course, it's back there somewhere, but not where we can easily access it. And that's why hypnosis works, because you can go back in when you're not supposed to, when it's not top of mind, they can go back in there and find those memories. Now, you've thought about it, you've seen it on TV, you've heard it on the radio, you heard somebody say it. Something's come up in your mind, whether it was conscious or unconscious, because we have thoughts that are conscious for a very short period of time. How many of you have those thoughts? Come on now. Y'all aren't even listening if you didn't respond to that. I don't know what you're thinking about, but you weren't listening. We have thoughts, even if they're conscious, but they're briefly conscious. And if we don't think, oh, let me think about that, let me pursue that idea, then what happens? It disappears. Even if we think, let me think about that, but then we say, let me get a pencil and write it down. Now our mind has gone to the pencil, we forgot the idea, right? Y'all didn't say amen. Y'all, amen. What are y'all doing, watching TV? And so that's what happens. So those thoughts, they're brief, but they're conscious. And we may not even remember thinking about it, but then in our dream, guess what? Somebody's face appears. It's because we've thought about it. An event, a place. So all those things that we've thought about through the day, whether for long periods or brief periods, it's there. And now it's all being swept away, filed away, cleaned out, so that we can wake up the next day fresh, ready to take on a new day. That's a dream. And so I can sit down and say, well, if you have a dream about a cow, this is what it means. And if you dream about a cloud, this is what it means. And if you dream about a clown, this is what it means. I mean, I could give you all kind of ideas about what it means, but it would all be subjective. It would all be supposition. And so these wise counselors of Pharaoh went to their libraries, and he said, well, I dreamed about seven cows, and they were fat cows. And so they went to their library, and they said, let's look up cows. What do cows mean? And so they looked, and then he said, but then I had seven thin, sick cows that came up, and they ate those big cows. And they said, ooh, making it hard on us, but let's see what it means. And so they looked it up. And then I dreamed about corn, big corn, and then wheat corn. And so what happened? They went to their books and they looked up cows and they looked up corn, and they came back and they said, Pharaoh, this is what it means. He said, that's not what it means. Come on, guys, you can do better than that. That's really what happened. And he wasn't satisfied with the explanations that they came up with. And the Bible, in fact, says that he was wroth, verse 10, with his servants. This is where he said he was wroth because they hadn't He was wroth with his servants. Wrong verse. Skip that. So he was wroth with his counselors, and he said, there's got to be somebody. And guess what? This butler that he had put away now comes back in verse 9 and says, I do remember my faults. Verse 8 is where he was mad with all. He was wroth with his helpers. And so he said, remember you locked us up? Yes, I remember. Well, while we were there, there was this guy, and we had dreams. And he told us what those dreams meant. Not only did he tell us what they meant, but it came to pass just exactly like he said it was. And he said, why didn't you tell me about him? Bring him up here. And so that's where we're going to pick up in chapter 41 in verse 14. Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. They brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. And I want you to think about this. He's been in that dungeon now. And while he still got up every morning and worked, and he was in charge of the whole ward, when it was time to go before the king, he had to clean up. It was more than just getting cleaned up at the end of the day. He had to get cleaned up for a special event to enter into the court, into the king's court. Verse 15, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have dreamed a dream. There's none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, and this is key right here. This is really important. It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Not just an answer, but an answer that will satisfy you. An answer that will meet your curiosity and solve your anguish because of being troubled by this dream. And of course, then Pharaoh describes the dream. And in verse number 25, Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. And then in verse 28 through 32, Joseph commences to tell Pharaoh what the dream means. And I believe you've probably been here before, and since this is an overview, not a deep study, I'll just tell you what the dream was. There's going to be plenty in the land of Egypt for 7 years. And at the end of those 7 years, there's going to be a sudden drop, and there's going to be a drought, a dearth. And so the first 7 years, that's those fat cows and those big corns. And then the next 7 years, that's them skinny cows. But here's what he said. He said those 7 years of lean or dearth are going to be so bad, we're going to forget the good years. We'll forget all about having all we needed because it'll be so tragic and so drastic. And so that's what the dream means, King. So here's what you need to do. In verse number 33. Oh, look at verse 32. I'm sorry. For the dream was doubled to Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will surely bring it to pass. So it's absolute. It was said twice. You had the dream two times. So that you would understand this is a real God thing. That's why. And then in verse 33 he says, Now hold on just a second. Let me just stop and say this. Do you understand Joseph's done all he needs to do? They got him out of the jail for one reason. Tell me what the dream was. That's it. You did your job. They'll put a coat on him and a chain on his neck and call him the king dreamer. You know, the lead dream, the president of dreams, whatever. He's done his job. But how many of you think that's enough? How many of you believe it's enough just to do what you're told to do, just what's expected of you? Don't you think we ought to do above what's expected of us? More than is expected of us? Don't you think we should go above and beyond and over-deliver? And that's what he did. He did more than was asked of him. Now you say, of course he did. He's Joseph. Of course he did. He was raised right. Of course he did, because God had his heart. All those things are true. But I just wanted to bring it up. At this point, he's done enough. But that's never enough. Goes on. Verse 33. Because what happens in verse 33 all the way up through verse 44 is that Joseph gives Pharaoh a solution. How many of you are problem solvers? How many of you know somebody that's problem creators? Right? Yeah. And I like to tell the kids especially, and you say, well, you shouldn't say that, but I think it's important to instill in our children what our desires are. And so Ben will come to me and he'll say, Dad, this doesn't work, and I'll change the batteries. Oh, Dad, now it works. And I say, son, I'm a problem solver. That's what I do. And I know that that sounds simplistic, but I think it's important for us to find ways to solve problems, because that's what people need. When people come to me to tell me, now I do realize there's a difference when I go into their home and they start telling me about their medical problems. They don't really want a diagnosis, they just want me to listen. And sometimes that's a fine balance, because sometimes I think I know what's wrong with them. But so I got to play that little fine line. But really, when people come to you, they do want you to solve their problems. They come to you to tell you about their marriage. It's not just so you'll know how bad the husband is. They want you to solve it. They want you to fix it. And they tell you about their money problems. It's not that they expect you to write a check, but they want you to tell them how to solve it. That's what people do when they tell you their burdens and their needs. They want you to have some direction, some sense of direction. That's why they told you about it. Now, there are people that just want to spread drama and create problems, and they don't really want a problem solved. They just want you to know that they got problems. I've told y'all this joke before. Maybe it's not enough time for it, but did I tell y'all about the woman who read the book, and she went home and told her husband, said, look, I was reading this book today, and it just said it so clearly, I need to tell you what it said. And he said, tell me. She said that when I tell you my problems, I'm not expecting you to fix them. I just need you as my husband to hear me and to understand that I've got a problem. Y'all know where it's going, or so, who hadn't heard it? And so he says, okay. And she says, so next time I tell you a problem, don't try to fix it. Just hear me. Just show compassion. And he said, I got it, no problem. And the next morning, when she was on her way out the door, she noticed a flat tire on her car. And right behind her came her husband. And he had his briefcase and his newspaper under his arm, and he was, keys in his hand, headed to his car. And she said, baby, I've got a flat tire. And he hugged her, and he said, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. Gotta go. Well, but the reality is this. Hey, that was worth it. That could have paid out. The reality is this. When people come to us as Christians, as leaders, as mentors, as elders, they need direction. And I'm going to tell you something. If the world ever needed direction, they need it now. Joseph had done enough, but he went on in the next 8 verses, and he said, look, let's read verse 33. Therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man, discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Now, I just want you to imagine what would happen if the man that was chosen was not discreet. If the man who was chosen went around and said, hey, look, here's the deal. We're going to have 7 years of plenty, and then we're going to have 7 years of drought, and so we've got to save up the stuff. And they say, how do you know that? Well, the king had a dream. And then they'd think the king was crazy. Wouldn't they? I mean, every time a prophet came along and told him what was going to happen, they thought he was crazy. So why not if whoever was chosen would do it? So what did this discreet man do? He went around, he said, look, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And Y'all remember that, don't you? And so I want to, here's what we need. We need to buy your land. We need to buy your crops. We need to, that you know, they set up a Department of Agriculture, of course. And so they started managing the crop. And they started saving the crop. And they started storing the crop. They didn't just go out and tell everybody what was happening. They just said, we're the government and we can do whatever we want to do. And this is what we're going to do. They started buying up land, which, if you'll recall, as they bought up the land, that's what led to the Jews being slaves, and really everybody in Egypt being in bondage and servitude to the government. So that's what they did here. He had to have somebody who was discreet, somebody who was wise, and set him over the land of Egypt, the land, the agriculture of Egypt. Verse 34, let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land. So there we have a division of labor. It's not enough for one person to have to do it. Look, Egypt's a big place. And we need to have several people that will divide the work and have certain areas that they're over who can be familiar with the people in those areas, and that way we can get it all done together. And let them take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years, gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh. Let them keep food in their cities. Nobody's going to be hungry. Look, what we're taking is the surplus. What we're taking is that fat part. We're going to let them keep what they normally have. But we're going to store up all the extra stuff. And that's good, isn't it? Aren't you glad you did that? Aren't you glad you saved? Aren't you glad you scraped by? I remember going to, did a funeral for a pastor. And then I went back and checked on his widow. And I said to her when I went back, I said, do you need money? And she said, no. Said, you know, he took good care. He laid up in store. And she said, I didn't know how good of a job he had done. And I was glad to hear that. Look, it's important. We don't want to outlive our money, do we? Y'all awake yet? Yeah. We need to save up. We need to store. And so we've got to be wise in our storage, in our savings. And the thing was good, verse 37, in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, boy, I like this. Can we find such a one as this? As this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? This is Pharaoh. This is a pagan land. In fact, if you'll notice, the name that in verse 45 that he will give Joseph is a pagan name. You see, it's Egyptian, it's Coptic. They were into the mysticism and astrology. Understand something about astrology. God put all the stars in the sky. He put them in a specific order to tell a certain story. Daniel understood that story. Daniel told that when he went to Persia. He taught that in the college there. And that's why when Jesus was born, where did those people come from? Persia, from the east. They were students of Babylon, where Daniel had taught, and they brought the word, the understanding of the stars, and they said, we have seen his star. Now, what happened is God made that story. And then the Egyptians, through their mysticism, they have turned that story into what we have today as astrology. You see, it's not the same story. It's not the same meaning, but it's been manipulated, just like a lot of things are. So, the Spirit of God, this is Pharaoh. This is not a Christian man. This is not a Jewish man. This is not a godly man. This is a mystic. This is, in fact, a man who the other people look to as God. Y'all do understand that. The Pharaoh is God to them. And yet he recognizes in Joseph that Joseph has the Spirit of the God in him. In verse number 39, Pharaoh said to Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Wow. Boy, when God raises somebody up to do something, he raises up excellent people, doesn't he? It's exciting. I want you to understand something. If God could do that in Joseph, God could do that in us. If God could do that in Daniel, God can do that in us. If God can do that in Moses, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Nehemiah, Ezekiel, on down the line, Paul, all the apostles, Peter, all of them. If He could do it in them, He's the same God today, and He can do it in us. An excellent, discreet, wise spirit. Verse 40, Thou shalt be over my house. According to Thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than Thou. Pharaoh said to Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand. Understand that ring. That ring, and I'll probably tell you this every time, but it's important. It had his insignia. And that ring is the ring where Joseph could go up to the 7-Eleven and put that ring up there and they'd give him anything he wants. He can go down to the hardware store and put that ring up there and they'll say, It's on your tab, sir. Everywhere he went, as long as he had that ring, he was good as gold. And so he had that ring. Look, that's power. That's authority. And he put it on Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen. Look, if he's going to be the second in command, we can't have him walking around in prison clothes, can we? We can't have him walking around like he just came out of the desert. We got to dress him up. Man, he's got to look fine. Now, I think it's important. Well, I'll save that for a pastor's conference. Y'all don't care. But let me just say, I think it's important that pastors dress up. I just do. And it's been coming on, and people say, well, it doesn't matter. And look, the Bible doesn't say I have to wear a coat. It doesn't say I have to wear a suit. In fact, the tie serves absolutely no good use. Clean my glasses with it. But look here. Right. Keep the chickens away. But because it's a tradition that we have established, I insist upon wearing it. Because I think that it sets you apart. I think that it shows a regard. Now, I don't expect everybody else to wear a suit, but as long as I'm going to preach, I'm going to wear a suit. Now, if you're going to preach, I might come in blue jeans. But I just think the pastor ought to be set apart. When you go to the temple in the Bible, those guys were set apart by the vesture. They were set apart by their appearance. And it does bother me. And, you know, from time to time we'll have a preacher come through here and he'll get up here and he won't wear a suit. And they'll even ask, do I need to wear a jacket? And I say, well, I'll wear a jacket. And I'll let them make their own decisions. I don't think it changes the spirituality of it. I just think it's important for us as a pastor, as a preacher. I think it's important to dress up. Anyway. And Joseph did. They gave him a fine vesture and a gold chain about his neck. Now, that's the only thing I don't wear. I don't wear a gold chain. But it was to show that this man had some prominence, some position, some value. And that gold chain, if you'll consider it, it wasn't some little old measly gold chain. I bet it was some you could lock your gate with it. I mean, it was a gold chain. And it showed that this was a man of prominence and position, a man of wealth. And you do understand that he didn't own anything. He had been a slave, and even in prison, 13 years since he left his family back in Israel. Not by his own choice, 13 years. And now he shows up, and because God gives him wisdom, just like that, he's second in command over all the land of Egypt, which will eventually lead to him being the single most important person in all the land. Because the drought extended beyond Egypt, which is where the story goes, and we won't get there, but that's where the story goes, because all the lands around them were going to need to turn to Joseph and to Egypt for food. In verse 45, Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah and gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Now those words, his name means revealer of secret things. Verse Verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh, went throughout all the land of Egypt. Do you understand? This man has been confined to the dungeon for all those years. And don't you know, now he's looking at the blue skies and the clouds and enjoying the vegetation and all the land and the freedom and the wind in his face. Boy, his life's changed. Just like that. And understand, life does change. Just that quickly. One way or the other. Verse 47, in the seven plenteous years of the earth brought forth by handfuls, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up food in the cities, the food of the field which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. Verse 49, Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. He couldn't even inventory it anymore. It was so much, he couldn't even keep track of it. It does go on. I just want to pick up a couple of points. Verse 50, they were born to Joseph before the years of famine came. Two sons, which Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bare unto him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For God, said he, has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. You see, when Joseph looked back on his childhood, it wasn't fun. He looked back on how his brothers treated him. Look, he wore a beautiful robe. His dad loved him. But his brothers picked on him, stayed after him, eventually tried to kill him, and then decided to sell him as a slave. Threw him in a pit. He looked back on that with terror and with fear and with tears. All these years. And now he says, he's out riding in the carriage. Somebody else is driving it. He's wearing fine clothes again, gold chain, big ring. He's in charge. He says, do it, and they do it. Boy, what authority. People want to hear what he has to say. His brother said, here comes that dreamer. Who cares what he has to say? And now people want to hear what he had to say. Boy, it's changed. His son's born. He says, I'm going to name this boy Forgetting, because I have forgotten the toil of my youth. I have even forgotten my family. Wow. And then he has another son in verse 52. The name of the second is called Ephraim. For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Here, think about it, as he's being carried by those slave traders, and he gets into this land, and he looks at this land, and he says, Egypt, yeah, this is not Israel. God gave Israel to Abraham for a reason, because this is a wonderful land. Who wants to be in Egypt? I don't want to be in Egypt. I hate this place. You ever been somewhere you said, I hate this place? No, work. Look, if that's really how you feel about work, get another job, really. I mean, it's not worth it. And he hated this place, but now he's riding around and he's thinking, boy, this is a great place to be. I'm glad I got here. And not only that, but I'm a contributing member of society. Man, people, I'm making a difference. You know that's what it's about, isn't it? He's able to make a difference. He's able to make an impact. And I believe that's what satisfied him so much, is that he was looking beyond those 7 years when everybody was doing well. Money was everywhere. They could buy whatever they wanted because everything was so rich. But he was able to look beyond and see beyond those 7 years, and he says, I'm making a difference. I'm going to help these people. There's going to come a day when they don't have what they have, and they're going to turn to me, and I've already made a plan. Guys, it's so important for us to have a purpose in our lives and to really be able to make a difference. Verse 54. The 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all the lands. But in all the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he saith to you, do." You see, all their 401ks dried up. All their security plans dried up. All their savings account dried up. Look, they were doing all right, weren't they? They had saved a little on their own. But when they got through all that, it got to the point where everybody was broke. And they said to the government, "You're supposed to help us. You're supposed to take care of us." And they said, he said, "Go to Joseph. And whatever Joseph says, you do it. Because we've planned for this. We've prepared for this." We go to chapter 42. And we're going to notice that Israel now turns to Joseph, turns to Egypt for supply. Verse 3, Joseph's 10 brethren went... I want to read it. I know it's crunch for time. Look at verse 1, chapter 42. Have y'all seen this? Do y'all see this? "When Jacob saw there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, 'Why do you look one upon another?'" I mean, guys, y'all have no food. It's not going to change if you sit there and stare at each other. Y'all don't have the answers. You weren't prepared for this. Don't just sit there and stare at each other. Go to Egypt. And so, verse 3, Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, "Lest peradventure mischief befall him." The sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Joseph was the governor over the land. He it was that sold to all the people of the land, and Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange to them and spake roughly to them. Not only that, but he spoke through an interpreter, which you'll pick up in just a second. But it's not just that he spake in a rough voice. He was speaking another language. He said, "Whence come ye?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Verse 8, Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them. What were those dreams? "My sheath is bigger than yours. We're in the field, and I've got plenty. And guess what? Everybody looks to me. And we were in the sky, and I was a big bright star, and the sun and the moon and all the other stars bowed down to me." That was a long time ago. He was a teenager. And don't forget, he's changed. Don't you think people change in 13 years? Especially from teen. You know, say he's now over, well, now he's 37. You do the math. So it's not just been 13 years, it's been 20 years. How many of you changed a little bit in 20 years? In 20 years, he's changed, and they come and they look to him. Number one, he's powerful, he's well-dressed, got a gold chain, big ring. He's probably wearing makeup because he's in Egypt. He's speaking an Egyptian language. And they come in there, and he recognizes them. There's 10 of them. He knows Reuben, Judah. He knows those guys. He begins to count, looks around. He wants to see Benjamin, the little one. He doesn't see him. "Who are you?" "Oh, we've come from Canaan." "No, you're a bunch of spies is what you are." "No, verse 11, we're all one man's son. We're true men. Thy servants are not spies." He said, "Nay, but to see the nakedness of the land you're come. You've come because you heard we are in trouble, and you've come to conquer us in our need." Verse 14, Joseph said, "That is it that I spake unto you, saying, 'You are spies. Hereby shall you be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, fetch your brother. You shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether that there be any truth in you. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them in jail for 3 days. Man, he's playing with them, isn't he? He's trying to figure out what he's going to do, isn't he? You know, isn't it amazing said, I've forgotten my family. But here they are. And he hadn't forgotten. There's a bond, there's a tie, there's a connection. And I know that sometimes in our lives it seems like our family has forgotten us. They haven't. It's there. It's there. Verse 21. They said one to another, we're very guilty concerning our brother, and that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come. 20 years later, they're still feeling guilty for what they did to Joseph. It all goes back. Isn't it incredible how it all goes back? And we talked about it this morning, didn't we? Somebody said, oh, Pastor, I just feel like God's punishing me. But you're saved, aren't you? Didn't you ask God's forgiveness? When I ask God to check the record, there's nothing there. You have no sin. There's nothing to punish you for. Now, I'm not erasing the fact that there are consequences to our actions. What we set in order, what we set into motion, it's going to take place. Except God intervened by His mercy. But God is not punishing you. Get that out of your mind completely. If you're walking around feeling guilt like God is punishing you for something, get it out of your mind. It's not in the Bible. So what about Israel? Totally different circumstances. We are under grace. Our sins are removed. The Bible says as far as the east is from the west, our sins are washed away. And so whatever is happening to us now is the consequence of the life that we have set forth, and we're the ones that have to change that. Right? I got a scratch on my face. I know y'all recognize that. Y'all all saw it. Everywhere I go, people say, what happened to you? But you know what I've done? I've put salve on it every chance I got. Somebody said, you going to go get stitches? No. Alcohol? Oh, yeah. Peroxide, alcohol, and Neosporin. Still works. And so you know what I do? I put that Neosporin on there every chance I get. I did, Brother Bob. Andrew found, he took the spur off that rooster. And I looked at it today. I'm trying to figure out how to put it in my ear. I almost got an earring from that rooster. He put that spur right in my ear. But anyway. But you know what? I've taken care of it. You know why? Because I don't want to have to live with that the rest of my life. I want it to go away, and I hope within, and it's almost gone, 4 or 5 days, it'll be completely gone. But that's what we have to do. If we want our circumstances to change, we have to stay after it. We have to keep after it, make it change. It's not going to change on its own. So, forget the idea that God's punishing you. But here are his brothers. His brothers are there, and they say, oh no, here it is. 20 years later, God's still mad at us. 20 years later, we're still suffering for what we did to Joseph. And verse 23, Joseph's overcome with emotion. Verse 24, he turned himself about and he wept and returned to them again and communed with them and took from them Simeon and bound him before. He took Simeon and locked him up and sent him away to jail and sent the rest of them back to go get Benjamin. That's what he did. He wanted them to have one. He said, send one to get Benjamin. But after them being in jail for 3 days, he said, well, that's not going to work. Obviously, they're not going to do it. Let me keep one of them as collateral and then send them home. Well, here's what happened. Let me just tell you the story. They went home. Dad says, what happened? They said, well, we've got the corn, Dad, but a terrible thing has happened. We've noticed that in our corn, all of it's paid back. We've got all the money we took with us. Oh no, y'all robbed them. You stole the money. You shoplifted. No, that's not what happened. We paid for it. Honest, we paid for it. But somehow the money's back. We've even got this cup that belongs to the governor. We're in big trouble. We're in hot water. Where's Simeon? They kept Simeon. He's locked up. They wouldn't let him come with us. In fact, here's what they said. They said, if we want Simeon back, and we want to prove ourselves to be righteous, we got to get Benjamin and go back. And you know what Jacob said? No deal. He's not going. That's my youngest son. I've already lost Joseph. I'm not losing Benjamin. And you're just not going back. You just have to give up. Sorry, Simeon, but we're not going back. So you know what they did? They used that corn they brought home. They used that corn. And they ate that corn. And Simeon wasn't with them. Simeon was back in jail in Egypt. And they ate the corn. And they used the corn. Until what happened? They ran out of corn. They ran out of corn. Guess what? You got to go back. And let's pick up there next week. Let's stand. Father, we're thankful for Your love and Your grace and for the joy